Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game in the Game Nashville app. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Tennessee Superbook is the number one sports book in Las Vegas. Now we will continue to keep you updated with the condition of Damar Hamlin as soon as that information becomes available. Again, Bills safety Damar Hamlin, a really, really scary situation on Monday Night Football last night. The latest update from the Buffalo Bills says that Damar Hamlin spent last night in the intensive care unit and remains there today in critical condition at the University of Cincinnati Medical Center. Of course, thanks everybody, fans, players, coaches in the NFL for their outpouring of emotion and support for Damar Hamlin. We'll keep everyone updated with that. We just chatted with NFL ESPN analyst Tim Hasselbeck, and he was breaking down the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, I'll be completely honest, and I shared this with y'all yesterday. I said I'm really not buying in to the four-game winning streak for the Jags. They beat the Titans because the Titans fired their general manager 4 days prior. I just felt like that was a team that looked distracted. You know, Derrick Henry with two fumbles in that game. I thought that was kind of, you know, more so the Titans shooting themselves in the foot than it was the Jags being the better team. And then they beat the Dallas Cowboys, which was a solid win for the Jags. I'll give them that. Went to overtime. Jags ultimately win that game. And then they beat the Jets with Zach Wilson at quarterback, Jets. Geez, let me just name every single team in the NFL. The Jets have already made it known that they don't believe in Zach Wilson, that he will not be the future of their football team. And then the Jags beat the crummy, crappy Texans. So I'm not really completely, totally bought in to this four-game winning streak. Now, Tim Hasselbeck thinks differently.
Yeah, they're confident. It is coming together. I think the quarterback has started to elevate everybody else's play. And I probably said to you back then as well, look, Travis Etienne, you know how you watch a game and there are some players and you're like, you know, I know all these guys are fast, but man, he looks fast among a bunch of fast guys. Like, that's how Travis Etienne looks. Much like I think people felt that way about Tony Pollard when they'd see him come in the game after Zeke Elliott and they'd be like, you know what, he's got another gear. I think that, look, that's Travis Etienne. And so he has helped quite a bit, you know, with their offense, just his explosiveness in the run game, in the screen game. And so I think with that, and then I think Trevor has elevated his play in a way that I think he's made the receivers better. I think they're a really dangerous football team because the quarterback, if you just go back to how people thought of him when he was being evaluated out of college, kind of one of these guys that, like, I think people felt like he could play at a level, an MVP-type level at some point in his career. I think he's trending in that direction. So, you know, when you have that type of play out of that position, I think it matters. And then defensively, you know, they've continued to be a competitive group with guys playing hard. And, you know, I think the Dallas game is probably the best example of, you know, why that matters for their team.
So there you go. Tim Hasselbeck calling Jacksonville a dangerous team. And he mentions two players in particular, Travis Etienne and Trevor Lawrence. And I think those are all fair. And I think that's what I looked at this Jags team, thinking that they would be a lot more dangerous this season than they were last, because you have a healthy Travis Etienne. You have Trevor Lawrence, who has a year of NFL play under his belt. He has that experience. And he also has a competent head football coach in Doug Peterson. And then he also doesn't mention Christian Kirk, but I'll throw in Christian Kirk. You add in those weapons for Trevor Lawrence and Trevor Lawrence's experience, I thought they would be a more dangerous football team, but I'm just not buying into how dangerous they may have looked in the last 4 weeks.
One of the things that I've heard Mike Vrabel say a lot is the speed, right?
Yeah.
And that was evident in the win by Jacksonville here. Now, there's no question you can talk a lot about what the Titans did to shoot themselves in the foot, but it was evident to me that when you watch the Jags play, they play pretty fast. They've got some guys who can run after the catch, including even a guy like Evan Engram, a guy that's always had that ability in his career. But, you know, for whatever reason, he hasn't been a great player. But for this team here recently, he's had some really nice games where he catches a ball on a crossing route and he is running for a while. He's got very good mobility. And I think you take a look at the numbers for Trevor Lawrence. I'm looking at Football Outsiders. He's risen up to a top 10 kind of guy. He is rating in the top 10 of efficiency in all of the different metrics now. So that's really coming around. He's only going to get better. So what I look at, Caroline, when you're saying you're not buying in and you're saying the level of competition, I get that. But they're not just winning those games. They've decisively won those. To me, that's the mark of a team that's starting to get it is you play weak teams, but you're putting those teams away easily. Like that game was over against the Texans at halftime. This is a snoozer. We got this game. We can rest guys. We can just coast to the finish line. That doesn't happen very often in the NFL. So that shows me that they're starting to put it together.
Well, if you look at this team, they've only lost by 10 points twice. Now, the debacle with the Lions, I think that was an anomaly. I think it was just perfect time, perfect team. The Lions were hot, too. Mm-hmm. They had to go into Detroit, I believe. They had to go into Detroit and play. And Detroit is one of the best teams or one of the highest scoring teams in the National Football League. I think they are the highest scoring football team
at home
in the National Football League. At home.
Yeah.
So, to me, it wasn't a surprise, but every other game after that, they've only lost by 10 points one time. Every other game has been within a touchdown or less. That's telling me that early on, this team, and we talked about this, Willie, and I'm sure you and Jared talked about it too at some point. This team was figuring out how to win early on, and they just couldn't. For whatever reason, they were making mistakes. They were shooting themselves in the foot. It wasn't anything that the other team was doing. Lawrence was throwing interceptions that he shouldn't have been throwing. That they were fumbling. Everything was happening to a young team that you expect. They were doing things and turnovers were happening. But as the season continued to go, this team found a way to win games. They start to learn how to win those close games. They start to learn how not to fumble the ball or turn the ball over. They learn how to not make those crucial mistakes at those crucial times of games. Now they go on a 5 or 6 game winning streak. To me, it has everything to do with what Jacksonville is doing and a little bit less than what everybody else is doing. When you're playing faster and more physical than the team, then you're going to cause the other team to have turnovers. Mm-hmm. That's why Mike Vrabel preaches all the time. We got to get turnovers. We got to play fast and physical every game. Because when you do that from a defensive standpoint, you're going to cause turnovers.
Right.
And that's what the Jacksonville Jaguars were doing in this span or are doing in this win streak. So, to me, the Jags are for real. I didn't think at the beginning of the season the Jags would make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But what I did say, they're going to make it very hard for Tennessee and Indianapolis to win this division. And what has happened? They did exactly what I said they were going to do. They're making it very – Indy's out of it. They're making it very hard for the Tennessee Titans to win this division. Why? Because this is a young team with a really good head coach, a Super Bowl winning head coach that has got these guys, and these guys have bought into what he's preaching. Now they know how to win these close games, or it seems like they know how to win these close games. They're fast, they're physical, and they're young. Mm-hmm. They want to go out there and prove each and every week that they're getting better as a team. And I think they are. Now, the Titans, yes, they're going in the opposite direction because of injury, but I still believe that if the Titans don't have injuries and the Jags don't have injuries, these two teams are still battling it out at the end of the season to see who's going to win division. That's how good I think this Jaguars personnel is compared to the Titans.
I don't know if I can go that far because I look at a completely healthy Titans defensive line. You have 100% Jeffrey Simmons, 100% Harold Landry, 100% DeNico Autry. I think that
don't count DeNico Autry. Please don't count DeNico Autry.
Why?
He's been in and out of the lineup. He's even when he's healthy. He doesn't give you $15 million worth of play.
I disagree.
Show me where Bud Dupree has.
Oh, she said Autry.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I
take everything back, Caroline. I'm so sorry.
I know
you're right about DeNico Autry. Yes.
I know your beef with Bud Dupree.
Yes.
But DeNico Autry, I think he's been an invaluable addition to this defensive line. No, that's okay. But I think DeNico Autry is one of those guys, he's like a silent warrior, where he doesn't have like the flashy numbers like a Jeffrey Simmons might have. Yep. But I remember going back to an article an ESPN article, whenever the Titans first acquired DeNico Autry, they called him the Robin to unlock Jeffrey Simmons' Batman. Anything that's totally come to fruition.
I don't know why Indianapolis let him get out the building.
Seriously, because he gives the Indianapolis Colts hell every single time they play. But I think, you know, as you mentioned, you know, the physicality and the toughness that the Titans want to play with. I think that was exactly why they were able to keep it so close with the Chiefs. And if Tannehill was 100% healthy, I think they would have won that game. It was because they can out-physical and they can out-tough teams like the Kansas City Chiefs that I don't think play incredibly physically. But, Will, you mentioned Evan Engram because Tim Hasselbeck mentions Travis Etienne, Trevor Lawrence. I'm mixing up my TR names. There was another name that you brought up, and that was Evan Engram. And Mike Vrabel touched on Evan Engram because Evan Engram gave the Titans a difficult time whenever they played earlier this season. 162 receiving yards and 2 touchdowns from a guy that I don't think he's that kind of player. He's a fine player.
His best days were in New York.
His best days are behind him.
But he's had one of his better years, especially since those days in New York. He was a very young player coming out of Ole Miss. But, in fact, I think he was on that gravy train that Hugh Freeze had going there where they were.
Yeah, he came out with all that. That year they had a good team. Well, they were.
There was a little bit of
13, 14? Yeah.
There was a little bit of NIL before NIL.
Yeah, pre-NIL. Yeah, Hugh Freeze and Ole Miss were not alone in that.
He's catching 73% of the balls thrown to him. He's been really efficient to go with that run after the catch. So I think he's as confident, as effective as he's been for a long time. And so I start looking at one thing, one little tidbit we got again from Mike Vrabel, and it was overshadowed by what happened in Cincinnati last night, all the questions with there. But that's 2 days in a row now where they are not activating David Long. And if they're not doing it today, the game is Saturday. So it's unrealistic to think that it's going to happen this week. He more or less said it. Mm-hmm. Joe Rexroad even doubled down and said, are there any other players you're considering activating with that slot? Because they have one guy that they can activate from IR.
And you think they're saving it for possibly Ryan Tannehill?
No, I don't think so. I think they are just saving it for this week and hoping they can win this game and then have it in their back pocket for next week. But if David Long can't practice today, I mean, maybe tomorrow, but they're running out of time. It's like David Long would be a nice matchup to have against a guy like Engram, right? A guy who can run. He can cover if he needs to cover. It's always been a strength of him. He's a huge part of that defense. Without him, that's going to be tough. The other guy I'm looking for is Fulton. Well, they have him. They need him, I think, to be able to contain this Jacksonville offense. If I've got him, then I still feel like, okay, I can put together a game plan with Autry in there, with Simmons back in there. If I can get to the quarterback a little bit, I got a shot. But without Long, and if Fulton can't hold up, oof. There's going to be some matchup problems there.
And that's what I want to get into coming up next, because I think that we all agree there's a certain path to victory for the Titans on Saturday to win the AFC South. With the personnel at hand, can they do it? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, the game. How do the Titans win this weekend?
That's a great question. Look, I think, you know, the formula definitely is run the football, play really good defense, don't turn the football over. And, look, I think that's, you know, it's kind of generic and it's, you know, probably been the plan for the Titans for a while. It's just been easier said than done. And then I think this, look, the job that, Doug Peterson has done, you know, with that football team, I think is, you know, commendable. And I think Trevor Lawrence's development has been real. So I think there's part of it, too, where, you know, in terms of defending Trevor, I think it's different than defending him last year. I think you have to find ways to confuse him. I think it was easily done in the past. I don't think it's easier as easily done now. And so I think that's, you know, part of what you need to try to do with him. And he's done a good job of seeing things.
There you go. That was Tim Hasselbeck, who joined us earlier this hour, saying, hey, the keys to victory for the Titans this weekend is probably the same exact thing that they've been doing every single week. It's run the football, play good defense, don't turn the ball over. That's the formula to success for the Titans. Now, running the ball, they're going to have Derrick Henry back in the backfield. I think that's a huge addition to this Josh Dobbs-led offense this weekend. Turning the football over, we'll see. Take care of the football. That's been Mike Vrabel's message all week long. But playing good defense, that's a question that I have. because Jeffrey Simmons sat last week. You feel better about at least a more well-rested Jeffrey Simmons. But there's going to be one player that at least the Titans don't have for now. Mike Vrabel provided an update.
No activation for Long this week, Mike?
Not as of today, no.
Okay, so David Long Jr., no activation from IR yet. Now, he was eligible to be activated from IR. He went down in the Eagles game, so Jags, Chargers, Texans, Cowboys, that's 4 weeks. So he is eligible to be elevated from IR. But I look at David Long Jr., and he just adds a level of just firecracker to this defense. I mean, he plays like he's a chicken with his head cut off. He is so tough. He is so quick. He adds so much energy to this defense. This Titans defense can play well without him, but I think this defense hurts without David Long Jr.
Well, he gives them a, you know, the ability to cover, whether it be backs or tight ends, a back out of the backfield, a tight end, whether he's lined up flexed out wide or he's tight in a three-point stand. David Long Jr. gives the Titans the ability to say, okay, listen, we can put this one guy on your speedy wide receiver, I mean, your speedy tight end or your speedy running back.
Which is what got the Titans last time they played the Jags.
Absolutely. And, you know, because of, you know, his ability to get sideline to sideline, his quickness, his toughness, his ability to open up and run downfield, not many teams have that at the linebacker position. And the Titans had it. They have it. But had it in regards to play. He's on, you know, he may not play this week. He doesn't look good. He didn't play last week. And he didn't play against Jacksonville the first time. And they missed that because in this league, you know, teams are trying to find that running back that can catch the ball out the backfield. They're trying to find that tight end that can be a matchup problem for opposing teams' defenses. Well, Jacksonville has both. They have a running back in ATN that can run between the tackles, run outside, but they also can catch passes out the backfield. Mm-hmm. And he's fast and quick. And then they got Evan Engram that he's been in the league a while. It's his best years or his best year was in New York. After that, we didn't hear much of him. Now it seems like he has a resurgence. Why? Because he has an elite quarterback and he has a play caller that knows what he's doing. So now you're starting to see that potential that the Giants thought they had. And he was injured a lot in New York as well. But now it's starting to all come together. So if you're going to beat a team like Jacksonville from an offensive standpoint, you better have guys that can run with Evan Engram or Travis Etienne.
The other thing, too, that I think about is, you know, when they've had their best, they have really done a good job of getting pressure without having to bring the
blitzes,
fifth guy,
yeah,
the sixth guy. That disappeared for a while, especially when they lost Autry. Now, hopefully, with Autry back in there, Simmons, now, how healthy are they? We know they're not 100%, but are they good enough to mount something there where you could get – I thought the pass rush was okay last week against Dallas. There were some encouraging things. Rashad Weaver, I think, is getting a little bit better. You know, some of the other guys. Tier Tart had a great game. I'd love watching him play. So that's got to be part of the equation here, is get after him. But as you heard Tim say, you know, you could maybe scheme your way into making Trevor Lawrence make some mistakes, right? He got fooled a few times. It's not happening as easily now. He has cut down the turnovers. I was looking at this. He had the one bad turnover here against Dallas. Remember, he was running. He made a great run.
Yeah.
They were trying to go in for a go-ahead score, and he coughed it up. But there's been a lot less of that from week to week. And I think it's been impressive. It's easily showing the growth of a quarterback. He's reading defenses better. So can you find a way to get a turnover or two? You would figure for this game to go the Titans' way, you've got to win the turnover battle, right?
But a lot of that comes with getting pressure up front. And now that, you know, Danico Autry is back, I think take away Jeffrey Simmons just for a second here. Put him to the side because we know what type of player Jeffrey Simmons is. We know it. And you mentioned something that when they brought Danico Autry over, it was like, you know, unlocking, you know, Batman because you got Robin.
Right.
So now you can unlock
another
his
level of Jeffrey Simmons.
Now he can really go.
Yeah.
But take away Simmons. The two guys that were missing, and one of them may not play, David Long Jr. and Danico Autry, those two guys probably are the most important players on that front because of what they have the ability to do. If you double team, now we know that Jeffrey Simmons is just that guy. Put him to the side. But sometimes that gets lost in it is those grunt guys. Sometimes those are the most important guys because no longer can you double team Jeffrey Simmons because you got to worry about Denico Autry, T.R. Tart, guys like that. Also with David Long Jr., he gives you the ability to play man-to-man, you know, with the tight ends or the running back. Now you don't have him. Denico Autry, he's still working through his injuries. That's going to be something to watch. One, if they don't have David Long Jr., we need to watch that very closely. But how effective can Denico Autry be having, you know, another week into the system? You know, because he's been hurt for a while.
Working the rust off.
Exactly.
Hopefully feeling a little
more
healthy.
How do he and Simmons work in tandem? Will it be as if they don't miss a beat like they did at the beginning of the season, or is it going to take time for them to kind of get things ramped back up? We need to watch that because if they don't miss a beat, it's going to be difficult for Jacksonville to run the football or do anything. But if they are still a little rust, then Jacksonville is going to be able to do some things, not just in the run, but I think in the pass as well.
And I think, too, that could be something that, you know, it takes a few plays, might take a couple drives to knock the rust off. But I think these two have been playing together long enough that it's almost like riding a bike. You get back onto it, maybe you need a couple plays to knock it off, and then it's like, okay, right back to business as usual, right back to this well-oiled machine that the defensive line has been for so long for the Titans in the past couple of years. But Mike Vrabel was asked about Evan Engram. Not only is it a player that lit the Titans up the last time they played, over 160 yards, two touchdowns. And I don't think that Evan Engram is the kind of player that you're going to get 160 yards and two touchdowns from every single game. I think he's just kind of a guy who's been in the league for this long. So if David Long Jr. isn't available, which I'm leaning toward, you most likely won't have David Long Jr. this weekend more than you probably will. How do you defend Evan Engram? How do you stop Evan Engram? How are you going to keep an eye on Evan Engram this week and not letting him repeat what he did to you last time? This was Mike Vrabel at the podium.
Do you have to have a different plan for Engram, or do guys just have to execute better against him?
Well, I mean, we probably need to be tighter on him and be able to, you know, keep our leverage, tackle, you know. But, it's not like they're going to not target him. You know, he's had 36 targets in the last four games. You know, had the one 2 days ago. So, you know, he was been a really good, productive player here down the stretch for him.
So, yeah, that was Mike Vrabel on Evan Engram. And, yeah, he's been productive. And Mike Vrabel not really giving a whole lot of insight. Just, hey, tackle.
Yeah.
Keep someone on him.
I wonder about the safeties, D-Mace. I don't know. We don't know if Hooker could be back. We know when Hooker plays, he's pretty good. But you never know.
You almost assume
he's not going to be in there sometimes. But he's not on IR. So you hope maybe he would fall back.
Then they had somebody go down last week.
Adams is another guy who could maybe match up against Engram, but he's gone.
He's gone.
Yeah. But also, how much can Andrew Adams do for you?
I mean, it's not as
he won't be doing anything.
He won't be doing anything now.
He's out.
But it's not asking him to do a lot. It's sort of, you know, imploring the same sort of defensive strategy that Buffalo uses at times. Buffalo uses five defensive backs more than anybody in the National Football League. Mm-hmm. They bring that fifth one in to substitute for a linebacker. A lot of times they're playing with two linebackers and five defensive backs. Not many teams do that because they want to be able to stop the run. But maybe that's something that the Titans can do. Or have they lost that ability now that Adams is gone to bring in that fifth defensive back or that third safety to come down and cover at specific times in the game? Can we ask Kevin Byard to do it? Kevin Byard's great at reading and dissecting, but does he have the foot speed to stay with Evan Engram throughout the whole game? I don't know because they haven't asked him to do that. Now, he did make a damn good play last week on the Dallas Cowboys tight end, who was pretty good, got an interception.
Dalton Schultz.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So he read that perfectly.
Yeah.
But can you ask him to do that every play, to line up against Evan Engram just about every play? I don't know if you can. Maybe they try that. Maybe they try to bring in that fifth guy. Maybe they just try to get pressure on the quarterback so he doesn't, you know, he's not able to get it to Evan Engram as much as he probably wants to.
But I think Kevin Byard has proven, I mean, again and again, and I know this is nothing new, but I think it was really on display last week against the Cowboys, is you're without some of your top guys, some of your veteran guys and your leaders, your Jeffrey Simmons, Derrick Henrys, Ryan Tannehill, and then Kevin Byard goes out and makes some huge plays, game-changing plays, and I know they didn't affect the outcome of the game. Obviously, the Titans still lost and only put up 13 points, but still, they kept themselves in the game because of plays that Kevin Byard made. So just kind of further, you know, proving his importance to this football team. But coming up next, David Poyle spoke on the morning show today. His expectations for this Predators team this year. Has his team met him? We'll get into that coming up next. And hey, play Silly Underdog Picks today. Pick three football underdog teams that you think will win this week for a chance to win great prizes. Play now at thegamenashville.com or the 1025 The Game app. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket and Superbook Sports, voted number one in voted number one sportsbook in Vegas. Download their app today. 1025, 1063, The Game.
What's been the most surprising aspect of this season so far, David?
Surprising is just I felt, very honestly that we're going to be a more consistent team than we have been to this point this year. I think everybody's had a little bit of their ups and downs, and I feel it's there, but it's just not coming as easily as it did, you know, last year. You know, at the top of the food chain, you have players like Shane and Forsberg. They got 40-plus goals last year, and they're playing well, but not at that level of production last year. Even like our what I would call our role players, the herd line that was Decisions, Trennan, and you know, has been actually broken up because we just individually we're just looking for a little bit more. And, you know, they're really struggling. You know, had 24 goals last year. He's only got three this year. I think he's playing hard, but the puck certainly is not going in for him. Trennan got a couple of goals as of late, but I think he's got five. So it's earlier, I think it's there. It's just we're just not getting it on a consistent basis, and we're it's a power play to a certain extent. We've that was a fantastic for us last year. I think it was sixth in the league, and this year we're really struggling. I think we're 30th in the league in the power play. If we could just get a little bit more going on the power play, that could make the difference in every game. So
there you go. That was Predators general manager David Poyle on Robbie and Rex Road this morning. The biggest surprise is the consistency of the team. And it truly is interesting because the power play has struggled mightily so far this season. But it's the same power play. It's the same core guys. It's the same, you know, the Mikael Granlunds and the Philip Forsbergs and the Johansons and the Duchesnes and the Roman Yossis. Your core group of guys, the players on the power play, the core guys, they're all still there. And I believe the Predators did nothing but try to get better in the offseason. You needed a solid forward. You sign Nino Niederreiter. You need some depth defensively. You sign Ryan McDonagh, a guy who is a proven commodity in the league. Yet the Predators still cannot consistently get wins. And they will go on a long losing streak, win a couple of games, and then drop a few games, and then win one, and then lose one. And it's kind of been the trend for this Predators team. So I look at the inconsistency of this hockey team, and David Poyle says that's not what they expected whatsoever. So who do you blame for that? At some point, you have to point fingers. At some point, you have to say something's got to change. We need to be a more consistent hockey team. There's so much money invested on this hockey team. So when do you point fingers, and who are those fingers pointed to?
Well, I think that has to be the agonizing part in all of this with David Poyle. And at John Hines as well. It's the frustrations of, listen, yeah, we've added some guys, but for the most part, the core guys are back. You know, our top line, top
they added
skaters
from
are
last
back.
Year
exactly.
To this year. Yeah.
And why hasn't it looked different? And you can't, I mean, we could point at the power play. We can, you know, say, well, our top line guys are not playing at the level they played last year. Well, how realistic was it for them to come back and play the way they did last year this season? They historically, you had guys playing out of their minds. So how then? I remember asking David Poyle this question a while back when the season started, and his answer was, "Why shouldn't I expect it?" And I get it, mm-hmm. I understand it, But realistically, I may expect it and want it, but what is the likelihood that it's going to happen again? And I think that's what's going on with this team. It's, you know, the top line guys are nowhere near where they were last year. But then the other guys are not picking up the slack either. So, you know, Caroline, you say, well, who do you point to? It's pointed at the whole team. You have to point at the whole team. We got to do something.
Yeah, I think everybody is looking at themselves in the mirror collectively and saying, what can we do better? Believe me, David Poyle is frustrated. John Hines is frustrated. Matt Duchesne's frustrated. He was asked the question about the first 35 or whatever games they played here. Now, of late, I could tell you, I would like to believe they are trending in the right direction. They're 3-1-2 in the last six. They've scored 10 goals in the last two games. They've scored four or more goals in four of the last six games. So we're starting to see some signs of life. Philip Forsberg was the number one star of the week. He's had a couple of big-time explosive games here recently. Let's hope he's starting to round into form a little bit. They just haven't put it all together yet. And there's no doubt that as we move towards the halfway point, right? They've got tonight against Montreal. This is a very important game. You're coming back home. You've got a home game against the team that's been struggling here. You want to take advantage of that. Then they go on a five-game road trip that has two back-to-backs, and you got some tough places there. You're at Toronto. You're at Washington. You're at Carolina. Those are some solid teams. You need to have success there. So they're going to have to be at their best. But there's no doubt that they have committed – based on what happened last year, where they were with the salary cap, where the league was, and the situation where it's a hard salary cap. Even if you wanted to break it down, it's not that easy because a lot of other teams are up against the salary cap. They'd like to trade some players, but there's really nobody who could be a trade partner. So they committed to try to make the playoffs this year. They want to be better than they were last year, and they are falling short of those expectations to this point. But you have to hope that your hot streak is coming, that you can string together some wins and be right in there when the time comes. So we're getting close to the halfway point. There's a lot of hockey left. But I'm liking what I've seen in some areas here in the last five or six games. They've gone through a tough stretch here. But I'm hoping because they're going to have the goaltending. I'm very confident of that. As long as UC Saros is healthy and playing, he's going to give you a chance to win. The defensive structure, I think, has been better. They've been really working on how to play faster and gain more chances. The power play. They're 3-1-2 in their last six games. They've scored a power play goal in five of the six games. They've gotten points in all five of those games. So there are some signs of life to the power play. They've worked hard to try to make adjustments, but that's got to continue to go in the right direction. Like, the power play right now is 28th. They're at 16.8%. For me, if they're going to be a playoff team, they've got to get that number up over 20%.
What is the average? Do you know the average of the league?
The average of the league traditionally is around 20%, but nowadays with more goals being scored, it's more like 22, 23% at league average. So they're below where they need to be. And last year they were up well over 20%. I think they were top 10. I think they were close to 24% if I remember correctly. And now that's a weapon, right? I think could that get better? Yeah, I'm hoping it will get better, and it's got to get better for them to be the type of team that they want to be.
Yeah, and four more goals in three of the last six games. To your point, Willie. Four of the last six.
Yep.
Is that right? Six against the Ducks. Okay, so looking at this, so Preds beat the Oilers 4-3. I think that was a big game. You get the bugaboo off your back of the Edmonton Oilers, who just seem to always have the Predators' number. But a win against the Blackhawks, four goals against the Blackhawks, against a team that's actively tanking, against a team that actually, you know, wants to compete to get the first pick. And then six goals against the Anaheim Ducks, who really are truly awful. You might think that they are trying to tank as well. And I just view this Predators streak, 3-1-2, you get points where you want them. That's valuable in and of itself. But it just looks like, to me, the same trend that we kind of saw with the Titans. You can beat the good teams, or you can beat the bad teams, but you can't beat the good teams. The Predators can beat the crummy, crappy Anaheim Ducks. The Predators can beat the crummy, crappy Chicago Blackhawks. But they can't beat those teams, at least on a consistent basis, that are in conversation for Stanley Cup contention. You know, the Avs, the Stars. that's where I'm at with this Preds team, is that I feel like I just know what this team is, and it's very similar to the Titans, and it's they're not going to be able to compete with the good teams in the league. And when the goal going into this season was, we want to compete for the playoffs, we're going to buy at the trade deadline, we're going to keep getting better, we want to continue to compete for a Stanley Cup. And your top players aren't playing to the level that you need them to be. It's so easy to say, hey, Matt Duchene, Roman Josi, Ryan Johansson, Philip Forsberg, hey, just play better, just score more goals. It's really easy to say that. But at what point do you have to look at the coach and say that your top players, we're not getting enough from? And even kind of the lower level players, kind of your more developmental or role players, aren't giving you anything either. I think your finger goes to the coach.
I think a lot of times in team sports, when you start to see a coach, you start to see his team sort of take the wrong turn and sort of head down this consistently bad road. Mm-hmm. A lot of times you look at it and it's typically a coach that's been there for a minute. And you say, well, the message is getting old. So mm-hmm. maybe we need to go in another direction because the message is getting old. Yeah, he's had some good seasons or she's had some good seasons, but it seems like whatever he or she is saying is not getting through to the players. I don't know if that's the case in this situation because it doesn't seem like he's been there long enough for the message to get old, in a sense. So I would wonder, you know, what is the problem then? Because eventually, you know, this is how sports is. It starts from the top and it starts to trickle down. You can't, you know, get rid of the whole team. Mm-hmm. So then what do you start to do as an owner or a GM? You start to look at other areas that may need changing. I'm not saying they're at this point where they need to change the head coach, but it's going to get to a point where you start, where that evaluation gets a little bit more serious about your head coach or about the coaching staff. And you may get to a situation at the end of the season and say, well, listen, we are not where we wanted to be, mm-hmm. and maybe we need to make a change, whether it's with the head coach or we ask the head coach, because we've seen this too. Hey, you need to change coordinators, or mm-hmm. you need to change this or that. You know, you still get to keep your job, but you need to make some changes underneath you. So whatever happens, or, you know, we don't know, but if this thing continues to go down this road, like you said, okay, yeah, we pointed at the players, but ultimately the head coach is the guy that's supposed to make all this work. So now we got to start looking at him.
And it's a results-based business.
Yeah.
And when you hear the general manager say, we aren't playing up to our expectation, when you hear the general manager saying, look, we want to compete for the playoffs, we want to make the playoffs and compete for a Stanley Cup, when you hear the general manager saying, we did what we could to get better in the offseason, and that's not coming to fruition – well, it's a results-based business, and if you get the results that you want, you get to keep your job, and if you don't, you lose your job. That's just the reality of sports.
Well, that's an outside opinion. I think you have to know your team. If you're David Poyer, you got to know, is it the coach? Is it the players? What are the coaches doing? Do I feel like the coach's message is getting in there? It's easy from the outside to say, well, if it's not going well, just change the coach. I get that. That's going to be out there for sure. You can go through examples of a changing coach in the midstream. Sometimes that works a lot. Sometimes staying with the coach you have works well as all. Barry Trotz is probably the most popular coach in the NHL, right? People love Barry Trotz. He was on the verge of getting fired two or three times during the year that they eventually won the cup in Washington. I mean, you can go back through. And he didn't come back the next year because of it. He was under so much heat. They kept his contract. They kind of hung it over. I thought he was gone. I think he thought he was gone a couple times. They stuck with him, and they won it. So it's not always just the coach. It's so easy to say that. I think there's a lot of things involved. One thing I completely agree on, they've got to do better against the better teams, right? You've got to take care of business against teams that aren't doing well. That's number one. But they've got to be better. They've been very close. They've lost a lot of really tight games against good teams here recently. Colorado a couple times. Vegas in overtime. At St. Louis, at Winnipeg, Dallas. The Dallas game's tied with 1 minute to go. They're right there in these games. They're not getting blown out of the water. It's one play here, one play there, and suddenly, you know, you can string together some wins here. There's not a lot. There's not a lot of changing for the players you're going to do. I do think they've infused some life with young centermen. Tommy Novak has given them a little boost offensively. Cody Glass, still slowly but surely, is becoming a very good all-around center for them. That's helping a lot. And the third guy is Juuso Parsonen. He's so young, 21. He's been given a ton of responsibility. I think his future is very bright. And right now, he's helping them be a lot better. So let's see how that goes for the next few weeks. There's still a lot of hockey left, like I said. And I think they're best. They haven't played great all year long. I think they're capable of a lot better than have they've done. So let's see how it goes. But it is going to be important. You've got to win games. Like at Carolina, they've won 11 in a row. That's your next road game coming up. At Washington.
Tough road stretch.
Yeah, Washington's about to get a couple players back on a team that's already really good. I mean, that's going to be a great test this upcoming road trip.
But that's something that Poyo mentioned on this show weeks ago. Like, listen, we got to start beating the good teams. And that's basically what it boils down to.
Because if you can't beat the good teams, then you just aren't a good team.
Yeah.
Right. And the where you don't want to be, and this is the in-between. People say, well, they've been mediocre. I don't think they've been mediocre. They've made the playoffs. To me, that's not mediocre. What is mediocre is just missing the playoffs, finishing ninth or tenth, where you're not high enough picking to really get the benefits of that. You're picking still kind of in the middle, and you don't get the ability to go into the playoffs and see if you can do some damage, right? So that's where you don't want to be. That's the middle to me.
Be caller 3 now to win a pair of tickets to see Alter Bridge at the Ryman Auditorium on Monday, January 30th. That is caller 3 to see Alter Bridge at the Ryman Auditorium. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 1025-1063, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 1025-1063, The Game. A really, really scary moment on the field last night on Monday Night Football. Damar Hamlin, Bills safety, it's his, you know, his first year in the league. Biggest game of his career, big matchup. The Bills and the Bengals, two AFC powerhouses, after a big hit, falls to the ground. We learned from the Buffalo Bills organization that he did suffer cardiac arrest on the field last night. And, you know, thankful for the training staffs on both sides of the field, the medical assistants from the NFL that were able to do what they needed to do in order to keep him alive. They transported him to the University of Cincinnati Medical Center, where he has remained. In an update from the Buffalo Bills, that he has remained in critical condition in the ICU at the University of Cincinnati Medical Center. That's the most recent update that we've gotten, either from his family or from the team. And of course, I know this station will continue to keep you updated throughout the day on the condition of Damar Hamlin. And I know that I am keeping my fingers crossed, keeping my thoughts and my prayers with his family, with him, and with the medical staff that will be taking care of him until he is hopefully released. And I look at his GoFundMe that he started for a toy drive to help support his mother's daycare, when their goal was a very humble $2,500 that's now up to $4 million. So I'm hoping that he can see that in the outpouring of support from around the NFL, from football fans, just praying for a speedy recovery for him and for peace to his family.
You know, that last story that you mentioned, it gives me a lot of hope. I get so mad at things that happen on social media sometimes. Last night we were talking about some of the pot shots people were taking that really angered me, you know, being so critical of this or that in that moment where really it's really just about trying to stay positive, you know, have empathy for the situation rather than let me critique this or that. Let me take some shots. Let me see if I can get some clicks. Let me see if I can get some likes and some retweets by being controversial. Just when I want to strangle social media and just throw the whole thing out the window. Right. Then this story from GoFundMe where because of that, the word gets out. People want to help. That gives me faith in the human race, right? That's why we love social media, but we hate it at the same time. But that's the good side of it.
Yeah, I mean, that was something that, you know, I don't want to ever see happen again. And I'm sure I could say with 100% certainty, no one wants to ever see happen again. Because, I mean, even though you play the game and you know there's risk involved, you don't ever think something like that would happen. Now, broken bones, you know, torn ACLs, you know, concussions, even though you don't like seeing that stuff, you see more of that. So when you see it, your reaction to it is a little bit different. It's more like, okay, I hope my brother's okay or my sister's okay. Boom. But we know, you know, we got to continue going. When you see something like that, whether it be last night in the Buffalo-Cincinnati game or, you know, during a basketball game or whatever, it changes how you view it at that particular time, and it should change how you view it moving on. So hopefully we continue to get good news. Mm-hmm. He's still in critical condition. And, you know, hopefully, you know, he will be out of the hospital and be able to be with his family sooner rather than later.
And I think it puts a lot of things into perspective. I mean, we cover this sport every single day. D-Maze, you played this sport for a majority of your life. Sometimes we lose sight of things that are really important. We'll get so caught up in the minutia of, you know, the injury report or, you know, fantasy points or the money that you can win from betting on games. But I think that the events on the field last night really put into perspective that this is really, truly just a game. Mm-hmm. And when all the coverage last night on ESPN, and I think they did a fabulous job keeping everything very human and very raw and very emotional in a really difficult and confusing time, I think that all put into perspective that the game is all just tertiary. The sport is all just so unimportant when it comes down to a young man fighting for his life and a family that is really hurting and hoping for the best for, you know, their brother, their son, uncle, nephew, whatever it might be, whatever the relationship might be to them.
Well, it's, you know, we all, you know, enjoy this game. And for players, it's, listen, let's go out there, let's enjoy it, let's have fun, but let's walk off the field safe and as injury-free as possible. Mm-hmm. That's our goal. We don't, you know, think about a lot of stuff in regards to injuries when we're actually playing it. But, you know, once that game's over, you step off the field, it's like, thank goodness I was able to play another game. Mm-hmm. Injury-free, and I'm able to play another one after that.
We'll continue to send our very best to DeMar Hamlin, his family, and the entire Buffalo Bills organization. Stillman & Company is up next.
Peace.